How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Just want to say quickly first, not that I think I need to, but I want to. I like perhaps yourself, I'm loving this World Cup. Everything about it. I'm also remembering, this was a guy that I barely knew, but talk show me is going, 2 goals for Harry Kane, 2 goals for Mbappe, 2 goals for 3 goals for Messi, 2 goals for Haaland, the stars, etc. Is this soccer's big moment in the United States? And we've had that conversation. People have had that conversation forever. And I had an editor in my newspaper days, Mike Ryan, and this was something that was told to me secondhand, but I've never forgotten it. He said, soccer is the fastest growing sport in America for the 35th year in a row.
Right.
So I'm not ragging on it. I'm loving it.
I love it too, but I'm old enough to remember Pele and Franz Beckenbauer playing for the New York Cosmos being the thing that was going to bring soccer smashing to our consciousness. And, you know, that was 50 years ago.
This is pretty hot, though.
Yes, this is awesome.
It's awesome.
I love everything about it.
Sal, want to take your turn? Are you all in on World Cup so far?
I actually watched, like, more today than I would normally watch. I generally watch no soccer at all unless it's a, like, you know, international event and the United States is playing. I think it's cool. I love the pageantry of it. I'm not much into the game itself, the sport, but I do love that part of it. I like learning about the teams now in World Cup, in the World Cup. I'm in this World Cup pool with Bulldog and, you know, Jeremy and Joe. And are you in it, Mike?
Mike's in it too, yep.
Mike, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were in it. I'm sorry. And then, from that standpoint, I did actually watch some of the game today. We did watch Argentina last night with Messi. Max likes Messi and didn't realize he scored a hat trick till this morning. And yeah, so from that standpoint, I like the spectacle of it, and especially being in our country.
You were covering Bills practice while that draft was going on, so it's forgivable to me that you didn't know the entire roster of who's in and who's out in that thing.
He sniped me on Turkey, Sal.
Oh, I just went by betting odds. I really did. I kind of looked and said, who's left and what are the betting odds? Okay, that's the top team. I'm taking them.
I did a little of that, and I did not think at all about who was in which groups. Turns out, two of my teams are in the same group, and they're both underdogs, and there's no way they're both coming out.
Uh-oh.
But I needed to draft Panama simply because I wanted to use that David Lee Roth image from the music video. So I had to do that.
I love it.
So that was it.
Hopefully that was worth it for you.
Yeah.
Worth losing.
We'll see tonight.
Yeah. Is it winner take all?
I don't know how our thing is working.
Okay.
I just said yes and didn't even know I was signing up for a draft.
Okay.
I do know this. I just watched Harry Kane put one off his head into the goal. I'm like, okay, I think that dude is supposed to be really good. Like, hear Nick Mendola talk about him, how great he is. And okay, forgive me. Okay, this is not my expertise, and I'll fully admit that. And I'm gonna sound really ignorant about this and like an idiot probably. But like, why is it so tough to defend those headers? Like, why is it so tough to defend those corner kicks and guys coming in and hitting it off their head? Like, it seems like it should be easier to defend. They're so good at doing it. And I'm like, that's amazing. But like, why do so many guys, why can they score on that so much?
I think that one was because he came from deep. Like, they weren't out there.
Yeah, he was way off the play and came in. And I am assuming that was a set. Like, it was just the player kicking the ball. Kicked it there for Kane to come roaring in.
Somebody from Croatia could say, however, let's make sure to mark that guy.
Yeah, let's, like, where's Kane?
Where's 9?
Right, yeah.
But I liked how, as soon as he hit it, he went right to the flag to celebrate. Like, it wasn't in the net yet, and he was already running to the corner.
He walked it in.
For the celebration. There's a guy who's done that before, I think, that guy.
Yeah.
All right, Sal, well, this is not that any of this necessarily will be, actually, but a new topic for us, the three of us together, and that's the secondary. That's your latest update, state of the Bills, the safety position. Lay it out for fans here. Like, just how will it line up? No Taron Johnson anymore. Rapp is gone. What about, you know, Hairston's status? There's a lot to think about here.
Yeah, so I wrote about both corner and safety over the last few days this week, so we could touch on both here. And I'll start with outside corner. We do have to separate them, outside versus slot, you know, obviously. So I'll start with outside corner. I still think you have three, and then who else? Like, there's room for another outside corner on this roster. Benford and Hairston should walk into training camp as the starters. But certainly, as we've talked about, I think that IGB could give Hairston a run for his money if Hairston can't stay healthy, or they just really like his game. They drafted him because they really like the traits that he brings, things like that. I think Max Hairston also had a really good OTA and minicamp from what I saw, and I think that he's up to this task. So let's see. That should be a good battle and a fun battle. Nothing wrong with having three guys you really like. Nothing wrong with having an option there, and guys are going to get hurt. We know that. That's happened. So those are the top three. And what we can slice and dice Hairston and IGB and debate what could happen there, and let's see it play out in the field. Who's behind them? Toriano Pride, a seventh-round pick? Kari Walker, an undrafted free agent? Jordan Dunbar, an undrafted free agent? They don't have anybody. Tecori Couch, who's really more of a slot, but they've used him on the outside in camp. He's been with the team a couple years. Like, guys, I just don't know who that fourth corner is right now. And I think you have to dress four corners, you know? Mm-hmm. You generally do. Yep. You dress four corners, outside corners, in games. And I think it's really interesting here. And obviously the name Tre'Davious White comes up. He's still unsigned. They have not given his number out. Whether it's Tre'Davious White or someone else, I think that they would keep a veteran on speed dial to ready to call, but they'll probably give this seventh round pick Toriano Pride every shot in the world to see what he does before doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much positional flexibility. I'm just looking at the depth chart, and Jordan Hancock is the name listed behind D. Elford, so that slot corner, I'll bet if he could play outside corner, maybe we'd know that, and you'd be mentioning this as a part of this conversation. So, yeah, I wonder about another guy. I said earlier, Sal, and you phrased it the way you did, talking about Hairston and Igbinison. Like, I'm almost bracing for Igbinison to beat him out. Just because. I mean, it's the new coaching staff, the new system. It seems he's their guy they drafted. They didn't draft, you know, Brandon Bean did, but did not draft Maxwell Hairston. And I just wonder if the writing's already on the wall there.
I don't think so. I think that Maxwell Hairston will have every shot to maintain that job, hold down that job. But I absolutely think that as time goes on, that could happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily right away. Now, sure, could it? Yeah. I don't think it's something they're just going to hand to Igbinosa and IGB, people want to call him, just so we know who we're referring to here. I don't think it's not something they're going to hand to him or even nudge him to be ahead of him. I think this is Maxwell Hairston's job. Walking in a training camp, he's got to lose it. And I think they do like his traits, what he has. They're not just going to put IGB on the field just because he's long and has some of these traits. He's got to go improve it. I think the biggest thing with Hairston might be the injuries, and he's smaller, and if he can hold up. So if we're having this conversation around Halloween, Thanksgiving, I'll give it – I think that could very well be the case, Bulldog. I'd be a little surprised if it happened right away, but certainly – if IGB comes in, I mean, IGB reminds me a little bit of like Dorian Strong, who they drafted last year. And unfortunately, we know now he's going to miss the season again. He's going to be on IR all year. This really kind of threw the corner long-term plan into flux here. And I think IGB does kind of give off a lot of what we saw and what we felt about Dorian Strong last year when he was actually showing that he could play football and be on the field and have these kinds of traits. Now it's a new defense, obviously. No, Jordan Hancock can't play outside. He's either a slot corner or a safety. Mm-hmm. At this point, I don't know where they're going to put him. I think slot corner is where I have him. That's what he's going to be, I should say. But, I mean, it's another year, I think, where I just don't see he's going to be on the field that much and, you know, maybe not even active on game day if he makes the roster.
Well, there is, not only in your words, but in your voice, there is some concern, I guess, about depth, at least, in the secondary. And the question eventually becomes, how exploitable are they? And we don't know that yet. That's if the rookie's good and the veterans hold up and are making plays for them like Gardner Johnson has done in his career, then I think, you know, you might be fine. But one other piece of this is, whether the balance between pass defense and run defense on the Bills changes, because they've been, as we've talked about as well, elite against the pass for almost a decade, and against the run maybe was overstated how vulnerable they were or the importance of that, but it, you know, that wasn't on the same level. So I don't know. Do you think philosophically that might change, that that might shift?
Yes. I think that, I'm not going to say okay. Nobody's okay with giving up big plays, right? But I think if they have more big plays made, but more big plays given up, that might be a trade-off they're willing to have, versus where Sean McDermott, and when he was the head coach, that's just non-negotiable. You don't give up big plays. You know what I mean? Like, we would take the trade-off of not giving them up by not getting them. I think this might be a new philosophy of, we're going to make big plays. You know what? That might come at the expense of giving some up. And I think the Bills might be okay, more okay with that now than they have been in the past, if that makes sense. So I expect that. I think we use the term, what, high event in hockey? Is that what it is? High event, right?
High event, low event. Yeah, sure.
I think we're looking at a high event defense this year. I do. I think you're going to look at a high event, maybe even a high event team where they have Josh Allen. Matt Bove and I, when we did the pod last week, we were talking about this very thing. And he made a really good point. When Bradley Chubb was signed, we did a Zoom call with him. Bradley Chubb from the outside. Now, this is a guy who played for the Miami Dolphins against the Bills for the last several years. So it's his perspective now. So it's really interesting. And I think
every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Probably should be, you know, taken for something here. He said, you know, for the last several years, the Bills' defense was just, don't get in the way. You know, don't get in the way. And do what you have to do to let, you know, Josh Allen and company do what they have to do. Whereas now, he's coming into a situation where they've been told, no, we're going to go out and try and win games too. Like, well, that's on us. We got to go make plays. We got to win games. Well, I think making those plays, the trade-off could be that you also give up some plays.
Yeah, you know, I really wonder about that. We were talking earlier here, Sal, really, I think at the open of our show, about, like, with the defense, I like how you put it there, like, high event. Like, maybe with, if the defense, you know, isn't up to snuff, they feel they need to pass more to be in high event type games. And maybe that ends up being the thing that sort of gets them over the hump. If they lean into Josh Allen a little bit more, instead of trying to sort of lean on the defense, play keep away, right? Run the ball. I'm not saying they abandon the run, but maybe it's not, maybe they're not like on an island as a run first team in the league. Maybe they get back to trying to lean into Allen a little bit more.
I think you're going to see those higher, bigger plays, both positively and negatively on defense. And I also think you're going to see a spike in Josh Allen's numbers, both positively and negatively, thinking about all this, which I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised if Josh has some incredible numbers put up, but I also wouldn't be surprised if maybe his turnovers or negative plays are a little bit more than what we've seen over the last several years. Again, a little bit more high event. Like, we have Josh Allen. We're going to go out and win games. What did Joe Brady say? Joe Brady said something really interesting, and he would never really, like, say, you're not going to say something negative against Sean McDermott or something like that. But if you really pay attention, he kind of gave you a clue back when he was hired or shortly after that, which was, he was asked about calling plays and, you know, how much freedom did you have, Sean McDermott being the defensive coach, you know, how much did he have a say in it? And Joe basically said, paraphrasing, hey, it was my offense. I called the plays I wanted to play to call. Mm-hmm. But certainly what he said was, there was definitely more of a directive when they played better teams with better quarterbacks to not lose the game on offense. So what does that mean? You're kind of reining Josh in a little bit. You're reining the offense in. Be a little more conservative. Don't give them more opportunities. Don't give Patrick Mahomes. Don't give Joe Burrow, whoever it is, more opportunities. I think that's gone now, guys. I don't think Joe Brady gives a crap, honestly. I think he's like, I have Josh Allen. I'm going to go win the game, and I'm going to let Jim Leonard go win the game on defense. And that's why I think we're in for a wild ride.
Well, I don't hate the sound of it. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. So part of this too, Sal, maybe this is more just how Jim Leonard sees defense and then now by extension the Bills, or also it lines up with certain trends in the league, you know, getting to a point where you might want to be better against the run. The teams are passing less or less efficiently, at least. So the timing might be good.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, back to your question, Mike, about how good they've been against the pass, but they haven't been that good against the run, because that's kind of by design, right? Hey, we're not going to get beat over the top. We'll let you bleed for 10 plays because you're going to make a mistake, right? One of the things that happens is when we look at a run defense, we think about stopping the run. We all do this. We think about the middle of the field. We think about defensive tackle. We think about linebacker. Oh my God, they're so good in the middle. Actually, where the Bills really got hurt last year a lot was on the edges. The Bills couldn't stop the run on the edges a lot. A lot of that was Joey Bosa just being undisciplined. They just didn't do a good enough job of that. Greg Rousseau is a good run defender. This scheme will even be better for him in the run. Now, he's probably not going to be a double-digit sack guy, but Bradley Chubb has been very, very good against the run and good at getting to the quarterback most of his career. And again, not a guy that's going to lead the league in sacks, but he's just been excellent in all areas of that. And then they go out and get T.J. Parker, who Brandon Bean compares to Bradley Chubb. Like, I think a big, big concerted effort this offseason from what they wanted to do as an organization and what Jim Leonard wanted to do was say, look, We are going to funnel everything inside. We're not going to get beat on the edges, and we have dudes who can still get to the quarterback there. It's not like we're neglecting it, but we're going to make sure that when you run on us, you're not going to be able to run to the edge, and we're going to have population in the middle anyway. So last year, that just didn't happen. They got beat on the edges too much. So I think that's part of this whole thing. Now, the variance part we didn't touch on, but that was corner I mentioned. You guys asked me about secondary. I wrote about safety today. Mm-hmm. Clearly, Bishop and Gardner-Johnson, the two starters. C.J. Gardner-Johnson led the league in interceptions just a few years ago. I was doing the research today. I put a chart out. He has 20 interceptions in his NFL career. He is a ball hawk. You know what else he is? A guy that gets a little bit undisciplined on the field sometimes. Right. And I'm not talking about the stuff that they wouldn't want a guy like that on the team.
Right. He's a risk taker. A lot of turnovers.
He vacates his spot, right? Like, this is what we're looking at this year. But he's going to start. He's going to play. They want that guy. And pairing him with Cole Bishop, who they can move around, I think is exactly what they want. And then I'm a little concerned about safety depth as well. But honestly, like, you have veterans in there, Damar Hamlin, Geno Stone, like, those guys can step in, give you a floor, understand what they're supposed to do. And if that's the case, and then I really, really am super interested in Jalen Kilgore because he's really kind of an ultimate chess piece.
Yeah, I feel like Kilgore, like, I would expect, Sal, I don't know, maybe you'll say different here, but you mentioned Stone and Hamlin. I'm guessing there's only room for one of them.
Agreed.
Right.
Sam Franklin's probably making the team.
Right.
He's a safety who plays special teams, but you at least have him in break classic case of emergency at safety.
Right. But Kilgore's the fourth guy there, I think.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. I think third, fourth, however you want to clear. Now, look, this might open the door for Jordan Hancock again.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have him at slot corner, it appears, behind D. Alford, who's entrenched there. I think he's your starter going in. But maybe that's position flexibility to say, we could keep Jordan Hancock and he can also move back there a little bit. Didn't go great for him last year when he had to play a little bit, but didn't go great for Cole Bishop his rookie year either. And then look at the ascension last year.
I like your chart, top 20 active interception leaders, including C.J. Gardner-Johnson with 20, tied for 14th. There's Bills all over the place here. Trey White has 19. Rasul Douglas stopped by. He has 21. Jordan Poyer has 25 still active, and of course Darius Slay, with 28, tops the former or current Bills on this list. Harrison Smith, the active leader, with 39 picks. This is a tough. I would bomb on this list.
We don't know about his future yet either. He hasn't signed with anyone.
Harrison Smith.
Yeah.
I would just bomb on this list. Yeah. I don't know. Rod Woodson. I would say who's active. I don't know. I'm stumped already. I would be really bad at this one. Okay, so Bill's off for a while, obviously. You have more of these articles coming up, or are we almost done?
I have one more to do. That's special teams. We talked about that a little bit last week, earlier this week, whatever. That I'm really curious about. We haven't seen Tyler Bass kick, right? I mean, like, what does that look like? So I'll touch on that more, but, you know, that's what I'm thinking, first of all. You know, what does that look like if they get to camp, and is he okay? And then there's going to be a punting battle. I, at this point, would expect the draft pick to win the punting battle, but you never know. He might show up and not be able to handle, you know, whatever in the NFL. That's Tommy Doman. Mitch Wishnowsky is on the team. And then Reed Ferguson. One of the things I was thinking about today, guys, I went to the 2016 draft. Now, Reed wasn't drafted, but he came into the league in 2016. He's the longest tenured Bill, meaning on the team for, you know, longer than anybody consecutively. And there's like 40 or 50 people still in the league from the 2016 draft. I'm sure there's some that are undrafted free agents, but here's Reed Ferguson still just doing his thing, which is really cool.
Tommy Doman, 7th round pick, one of three by the Bills.
Yeah.
The punter out of Florida.
They really liked him. I mean, they did a, I want people to understand, like, the Bills did a lot of research on punters this year. Like, one thing, and it was so funny, Brad Reiter keeps saying, Sal, you kept coming on here and say they're drafting a punter. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm telling you, like, I knew for a while they were really into punters at the combine. The new stadium is a big deal. The new special teams coordinator, like, they really went deep on punters this year.
Not like the 81 Colts.
This is so interesting. This is such a nugget you have to be walking around with. Like, I mean, just some. I saw you out and about yesterday, and probably people were like, hey, what's shaking? But the Bills are really doing work on punters.
I know, right? I love it.
Is he left-footed? Remember the left-footed Belichick thing for a while there where nobody sort of realized he was only hiring left-footed punters because the spin is different? And then, I don't know, did we all do that after that got out, or we all realized it? But not like the 81 Colts, Sal. If the Bills really cared about punters, they would have picked one in the second round, like the 82 draft, the Colts that year.
I don't think times have changed, though. These punters are such great athletes with big legs. You don't need to draft one in the second round if you want one and like one and whatever. These guys are just, they can do everything. This kid actually kicked off when he's at Michigan, grew up in Michigan, played in colder weather. Like, I'm telling you guys, like, these things mattered.
Yeah, no need to do that. All right, thanks for fitting us in today, Sal.
All right, you got it, guys. Thanks.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
We're at 3-2 England.
Someone other than Kane scored. That's allowed.
Bellingham.
Yeah.
Jude Bellingham?
He spent a minute at Man United. I remember them chasing him down from a team in Germany. It was a big deal.
Has Croatia ever heard of a word called defense? Have they ever thought about that?
Well,
every time I look up, they're just getting swamped.
Yeah.
But they're still in it. 3-2. England. We have a game in Toronto tonight. Panama and Ghana. Your Panama.
My Panama. Go Panama.
And then we have a late one in Mexico. Uzbekistan and Colombia. See, Colombia. I'm like Valderrama.
I'm gonna choose to read about that one.
Your streak ends.
I'm not going to make it to that game. No, I'm not going to make it to that game.
I intend to, and I know I will. I've watched a minute or more of every game, much more. Usually.
Even midnight last night, right?
Oh, yeah. I watched almost the entire first half last night.
Wow.
Austria-Jordan.
That's how we're different. I only made it through the first half of the Argentina game, which was at 9.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have a streak going.
I don't want it as much as you.
Right. I have a streak going. Saturday's going to be tough.
You're on the road with lacrosse.
Yep, that's gonna be. I got to get it on my phone on Saturday. Mm. Just, you know, peek, and I have a draft.
Oh boy,
Saturday's gonna be kind of complicated, but still great. Paul Hamilton coming up. The Sabres have traded Michael Kesselring to San Jose today, and moved up in the first round. You know, for the gesture from 27 to 20 in round one. The NHL draft is in Buffalo next weekend. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Also coming up, Brian Koziol. It's that day. One of my favorite days. 4 times a year on this show is the Pick 10 picks. Brian comes on. The U.S. Open starts tomorrow. And right. Bulldog has the picks. He's like, it's already done. The tweet is written. He's like Ian Harditz scheduling tweets.
Mm-hmm.
It's all set.
I didn't schedule it. I'll just go into drafts and launch it. I haven't figured out how to schedule these things.
That's fine. You don't want to admit to that. Next with Paul after the update here on WGR.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college. It's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I think you said earlier off the air that you were doing some outdoor homework today. Gutters or what was it?
Hedges.
Hedges.
Hedges. There's a... Yeah, the ladder, I've got, you know, this long-reaching hedge trimmer that's, like, barely, it's so cumbersome you can barely manage to use it because it weighs just enough that you can, okay, got to stop.
It's, like, it's too heavy.
Really long. I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, I guess I could invest in, like, a, I don't know, they make these things out of titanium or something, like golf club technology hedge trimmer. That would be helpful to me because this thing weighs, like, 80 pounds and I'm just outstretched and it's, yeah, but I did it. So I was joking with you. I texted you and said, cause it's been so hot in here, earlier this week, it's been fixed, but like I'm trying to work up my tolerance. So I went outside and did like I like doing the stuff around the house, the yard work. This is the one thing I don't like doing, getting up on the ladder, reaching, like, everything hurts after I do this job, but I gotta do it. It's gotta get done. Kids are at work. It's a nice day. It's not that hot.
Kids are at work.
Anyway.
Paul Hamilton with us. Paul, are you a hedge guy? Do you have any advice here?
I did mine today, some of them.
Look at this.
All right.
Look at you two.
Because it's garbage day, so the clippings get to go out.
Yeah.
And then I get an empty tote container tomorrow to finish up with. So
yep.
I can't get all the clippings in one tote, so I have to.
Boy, you and me are hive mind on when the garbage day is. I hate it when, like, big packages, I'm just as guilty as anyone in the house, I order a guitar online and it comes shipped and it's like, you know, there's more cardboard than a pizza place goes through in a month when you get a guitar shipped to you. Mm. And like, it came Thursday afternoon.
I gotta wait a week
for the cardboard.
That does sound like you.
Yeah, I'm glad to know. Paul.
Let it sit there for a week. Who cares?
No, but no,
you can't. It still bothers you.
I can't do that.
No. See, now I don't. I might take mine six out the cardboard and plastics and all that. Maybe six times a year. I wait till I fill it up because nothing's going to spoil in there. It's cardboard and plastic.
Oh, look at you.
So it's like, why should I take it down until it's full? So
yeah.
I just wait till it's filled up and then I take that one.
Well, I got one problem, Paul. Beer cans.
Don't you go back and get your nickels?
No,
whatever,
I just put them out there and somebody comes.
You do, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been doing that for years. Yeah, anyway. And I'm kidding. I don't have that many beer cans. I don't drink that much at home anymore anyways. So
we have a Sabres trade.
Moving along. Yes, we do, Paul.
Yes.
Paul, I bet it doesn't shock you that Kesselring is gone already.
No, and he's never, to my knowledge, publicly asked to be traded, but I'd be probably pretty surprised if he didn't ask. He did say to us in the media that, you know, when he was the healthy scratch as the season was winding down and again in the playoffs, he did say he disagreed with the way Lindy Ruff was handling it. But I will tell you this, in practice, he gave it his all. I mean, he did not slough off in practice or he kept himself ready. You know, he at least wasn't pouting on the ice when he was out there for practice and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's trying to get back in the lineup. And, you know, all of a sudden, Timmins is now ahead of him. And then Metz is ahead of him. And then
Stanley's and Shen ahead of him. Get here. Yeah,
and then
right.
Shen's ahead of him.
Right.
And they're all like bouncing ahead of him after – because of injury. Now, let's all be honest here. I mean – he never had a chance to become the defenseman he was in Utah with Team USA because he was hurt in training camp. And then he came back too early. He admitted that. And he didn't have his speed. He didn't have his strength. And while this all was happening, number one, because the trade was almost not quite to the day. It was the 26th last year. And we're on the 17th.
Okay.
So it's almost to the day a year ago. But back then, Byram hadn't signed a two-year deal yet, and I don't think he had yet.
And Samuelson was like MIA.
Samuelson hadn't emerged into what we saw many nights. He was Buffalo's best defenseman. So he was the cog. Now, sure, Kevin Adams very smart, wisely wasn't going to make the trade without Doan being thrown in there. But Kesselring is who he wanted to be a right-handed shooting defenseman to pair with Power to be in the top four. And that's and had he not been injured, he probably would have gotten that opportunity to do that. But being injured just took that opportunity away, and by that time, there no longer is a top four position for him, depending on what Byram winds up doing. He has one more year left on the deal, so he'll be with Buffalo for sure next year. But Kekalainen's already said he's very interested in re-signing him long-term because he believes that you start from the back end out. He also believes the Sabres have the best top four defense in the league. I think you could argue that for or against.
It's not crazy to say, though.
Not at all. He could be right.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, you could argue it for or against. And so the best Kesselring could do right now is try to work himself in the bottom pair, but I think Lindy Ruff likes Timmins better than Kesselring.
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, the choices made tell you that without anyone having to say it at a news conference.
It was the playoffs.
Yeah.
It wasn't game 71 of a lost season.
Like, right.
It was the playoffs. Just, Player got your best guys.
They used everyone they could ahead of him.
And so, the one game he played less than 5 minutes. What was it, 425, I think?
Right.
You know, and actually in that 425, I actually liked him. He made two good plays, I remember writing in my notes, but he only played for, you know, a little bit. So he saw the writing on the wall here. Lindy Ruff has a contract extension. I think if you're Michael Kesselring, you're thinking you're not Lindy Ruff's guy, and you're not going to be Lindy Ruff's guy. So let's get a new start somewhere else. And I read when you're talking about value, it's about a middle second round pick moving up from 27 to 20th. So, you know, that's
– Yep.
And then the question is, are you looking for a trade that maybe the other team wants 20th instead of 27th?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to cut it too fine and be like have it be too convenient here, and maybe it's overthinking. But, yeah, I mean, it's trade season, you know. It could be that Kekalainen has talked to a team or 10 teams. And 27, you give me to 20, you know, maybe that opens a door. And that has value in a big deal,
sure.
You know? So I want to be hopeful for that this is – because otherwise it's really just a dump. Like, if you're picking 20th and 20 instead of 27th, recognizing that, you know, there's – you know, obviously it's seven picks higher. There's some value there. I just hope it's a bigger – there's something bigger in mind here, because otherwise I'm just dump. I dumped what could have been and should have been even a useful player to move up seven spots in the draft, and I just don't think that would be smart. So I'm expecting, I can't say I'm expecting that it's a flip.
I wouldn't be dumping on Kevin Adams myself here, because he can't predict three injuries for a guy that they thought was going to step in and,
right,
and be a good defenseman. And let's face it, Kevin Adams also, and both GMs have confirmed this, would not make the trade without Doan being in on the trade.
Right.
And when Doan came here, Adams, one of the first things he says, he goes, we see an upside with Doan. I don't know if he saw 25 goals in his first year here.
And a seven-year contract extension before Christmas or whenever that was.
Yeah. You know, so I give him credit for that he wasn't going to make the trade without Doan. Even though Doan wasn't the main cog at the time, he is going to turn into the main cog. He actually, he and Peterka both had 25 goals, but Doan had four more assists, and I'll take what Doan brings on the ice any day of the week over what Peterka. I don't care if Peterka scores 35 and Doan scores 25.
Yep.
I'll take what Doan brings on the ice every day of the week over what Peterka brings on the ice. So even without Kesselring in it, as I said, I would not rip on Adams at all, saying, well, this failed because of Kesselring. Well, you can't predict three fairly major injuries that kind of took him out of this season.
Do you have a fresh Alex Tuch take? Has anything changed for you in the last week or two on him?
No, you know, we've talked about, I sat down with the age thing. And,
yeah, you wrote about that. I don't know if you talked to him, Mike. I was off Monday. That's fresh. I heard you talking to Jared and Joe about this.
Well, it was a number of things. We had talked about what he had talked about in his press conference, talking about sports science, which is true, and Lindy Ruff does talk to sports science and believes in it, and that older players are becoming a little more, you know, useful
young.
Or, you know, it's keeping up, you know, not falling off is what I'm trying to say. So then Staal goes out at 37 years old, scores 20 goals this year, scores in 5 consecutive games in the finals, and wins the Conn Smythe. So I said, okay, I got to sit down and start looking at some of the older players and how they produced this year. As far as, you know, I didn't look at goalies, but as far as skaters, Burns and Perry are the oldest two at 41. Brett Burns plays all 82 games for Colorado, did score 12 goals from defense, and Corey Perry with L.A. and Tampa gets 17 goals at age 41. Ovechkin at age 40 scores 32. Malkin has 61 points in 56 games at age 39. A guy, you know, I thought, look at Matt Zuccarello. He's 38. He got 54 points in 59 games for Minnesota. Marchand is still 54 points in 52 games at age 38. Staal, we already talked about. Even if you want to go back 2 years, Stamkos is 36. He scored 42 goals this year. So maybe with the technology and the types of things that sports science brings to the game, maybe 38 isn't necessarily a death sentence in hockey anymore for a hockey player. And we have no way of knowing what
right.
Tuck is going to be at age 38. But you know me. You guys have been around me long enough. I was always the guy going, you don't sign guys and
right.
Till at age 38. That's just crazy. You just don't do that. And now I'm the one saying, well, you know, maybe you do that because things have changed. And Tuck used the example of Landeskog, you know, talking about he felt 5 years ago Landeskog probably his career would have been over. He goes, but with the technology and with the treatments and the things and the sports science and the way things are done now, he was able to resurrect his career at a high level and be Landeskog again.
And he was
now,
out
he's
a
only,
long
what,
time.
32 or 33 years old,
right.
But still, that was the example he used.
Right. Well, unfortunately, none of this changes whether the Sabres want to pay him 10 and a half or more a year for 8 years, but it's good to have in your hip pocket, right?
Well, the other thing I looked up is the Stamkos year, which was 2016, when he was the free agent, he signed on the 29th of June.
Right.
And that made Poso the best free agent. And remember last year, Besser got to free agency.
And then went back.
And
to
a half seven. Hour into free agency, went back to Vancouver, could only get 7 years because he had hit free agency and re-signed with Vancouver. So just because it's June 17th and Tuck hasn't, and they're still far apart, that doesn't mean things can't move.
Right.
Because we have seen examples where it has. Now, if the $8.5 million figure is correct, if that's all the Sabres are offering, I think that's a total embarrassment to Tuck. But is that also a negotiating ploy? All right, we'll offer him $8.5 million, and on the 29th, we'll offer him $10 million or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? You know, I'm not a negotiator. I don't know, but I just don't. If I'm Alex Tuck, it's just you're not taking $8.5 million if that figure is correct.
Paul, thanks for this. We'll talk again next week, maybe
very soon, or maybe
take
even
care,
on
guys.
Friday. Paul,
draft is next week.
Keep your phone on, Paul. Paul's appearance with us here on WGR brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Brian Koziol joining us after the update at 6 o'clock on a word or two on this trade, I'm sure, and then also. The Pick 10. Oh, it's that day. The day before a golf major. Bulldog has the honor. You're on the tee this week.
I'm loose. I did all my stretching. Yeah, I
stretch. Don't be late like that one
I
guy
I stretch
was.
At home. I'm not the guy that gets out to the first tee box and pulls his driver and starts doing the... I stretch at home. I have an assistant.
Do people make that noise when they do that?
Yes, they
generally
do. Yes.
All right.
I even do it when I'm pretending to do it.
Like just now?
Yes.
So Brian, again at 6. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.